Welcome to Illy's Coffee Talks, the podcast featuring creative entrepreneurs in the Basel area over the best cups of coffee in the best cafes. Hi Devon, how are you today?
Hi, I'm good, thanks to you. Thanks so much for inviting me.
Thank you for coming to Heiko. I believe it's pronounced, so I'm not sure yet. It's in Swiss German, it means coming home, something like that.
Oh, that's so cute. Mm. It's such a cute cafe. I couldn't believe that this was all in here from the front.
It's super cute. We're on the mezzanine again, overlooking the shop and checking out everything we're buying.
Everything that I want to buy, take home.
You are from South Africa and you came to Basel about a year ago or so.
Yeah, it's been nearly a full year that I've been in Basel. I moved here in January this year, actually.
And you came for work. You created your startup.
Yeah, so I moved here for work. I am the co-founder of a company called Linum Labs. It's a blockchain software development company. And part of what we do at that company is we build out our own in-house products. And the one is in the pharmaceutical industry, so we decided to move ourselves to Basel to be closer to pharma and the industry here, to work with people from Roche and Novartis and the biotechs around here, and to really start integrating ourselves in the community. Yeah, and that's kind of been our mission since we got here.
And how did it work out so far?
I think it did work. I think we've achieved our objective of kind of integrating and building up our connections. It's been really interesting, I think, to meet all the different people here, and getting settled into Basel as opposed to where I'm from, South Africa, has been so different. It's really, really a different community. Yeah.
Do you want to share a few things that bother you, or that you noticed, or that make you laugh, maybe?
Sure, yeah. I think that so South Africa is a very diverse country, and there's not too many massive traditions because there's so many different backgrounds, and people there are, or at least their traditions are still very young. Mm-hmm. When I moved here, at least, it was really, really exciting for me to actually see a country like Switzerland that has all of these traditions, like Christmas traditions and Fastnacht, hard-coded into its DNA. And how generations upon generations can change, not change, but like keep everything exactly the same. They have almost like a Christmas routine a passed down through grandfathers and grandmothers and everything. So that was really cute that I noticed. It's also super, super safe here, which is really quite different from what I was expecting. South Africa, I would never go walking alone at night.
No problem.
Yeah, exactly. When I first got here, and I think my co-founder told me to come out to meet the team for drinks at about 10 p.m., and I was like, oh my gosh, I can't walk alone at night. And he's like, oh, seriously, you'll be fine. So it took me a while to get used to.
What would you do in South Africa then? Not go out?
We Uber everywhere in South Africa because there's not such good public transport. We have the buses and taxis, but Uber is super cheap there. Mm. So I'd rather just Uber to wherever I need to be. Mm-hmm. Or drive.
That's interesting. Huh?
Yeah.
Anything else you noticed in the people?
The people are very different as well. So, I mean, settling into the people here has been quite difficult for me, because South Africans are super friendly, like obnoxiously friendly. Mm-hmm. They hug and talk and invite you over, and they're just like very welcoming in who they are. And in Switzerland, it's a lot more reserved, what I found. Mm-hmm. But also because there's a language barrier for me moving to Basel. I don't speak German and I don't speak French or Italian. So I've been trying to take classes and...
Oh yeah, German classes?
Yeah. Yeah, and then I started only taking them about like 3 months ago, and I realized how much Swiss German has kind of worked its way into my vocab.
Oh wow.
Words that you just don't say in German. It's like, what's it, merci, that they say in Basel for the French words, and it's like, grazie, it's not German. Yeah. What is that?
Yeah. They use some French words, also.
Yeah, strange little mix.
Yeah. And also it changes everywhere you go in Switzerland, so even though you understand what's being spoken here, then you go to Bern or wherever and you're like,
yeah, exactly. It's been a bit weird for me trying to settle in here. It's taken me quite a long time, but I found as well that friends that I have now finally built up here are really, really incredible friends.
Like,
stay a while. But
yeah, that's the thing. When I don't know how it is in South Africa, but I went to Canada and Australia, for example, and I don't know if it's the English language or the culture, but I felt the same in both countries. And people are super friendly, and they would be like, yeah, come over, whatever. But then you call them and nothing happens, you know? They didn't really mean it. And then for me as a French person, and I guess it's about the same thing here in the region, Swiss or German, or, well, not for everything, but let's say for that, if you say, hey, let's meet later, then you really want to meet later, you know, and you really meet that person. And once you're in, you know, and if we don't care, otherwise, we won't say anything. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, it is different, but yeah, it's good.
Yeah.
And
well,
I'm,
now you're in.
Now I'm in, finally. Now I'm leaving as well.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it's been just like, it's like a brief year, and I work from home as well, so it's not exactly like I'll go to work and go and make colleagues there, like make friends with my colleagues or anything.
Yeah.
So it's what I kind of started doing is just to make friends. Was I started the Future Females thing, and I started up the, I have like a couple of like meetups that I run, like a blockchain and pharma network for work, and why not, I used to do as well, and I just ran out of time to keep carrying it on, but like doing like painting and drinking wine is
so great. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Sure.
So that's how we met, I think, or I cannot even remember.
Did you come
first
to the
event.
Future Females one, or did you go to the art one? I'm not even sure.
Probably both in the summer.
Could have been, yeah.
I think the first time the Future Female, and you were explaining a little bit.
Yes, so I think you came to the very first Future Females one.
Yeah, I think so. Because one of my friend Bianca was coming, I think.
Yeah. Yes, of course.
And then I came to the Why Not, and that's super cool. Like, you used to provide all the painting, drawing material, and the wine too.
And the wine, yeah.
Really good wine.
Gotta get the creative juices flowing, you know?
And everybody would just talk,
and
draw, and drink, and usually there were many, many countries represented at the table.
Yeah, it's with all of the events that I do, we generally don't have that many locals actually attending them. So they'll always be French or German or expats living in Basel now. So it's really a mixed bag of people, and it always makes the conversation really fun, especially after like one or two glasses of wine. We end up forgetting to paint.
And you started to do these events because of your mom, right? Because your mom is an artist.
Yeah, so my mom's an artist in South Africa. She has this studio called Dark Art Designs, and she does abstract paintings with acrylic, often of domestic animals like cattle and cats and cows and dogs. But she's got some really amazing work, and she in South Africa, she started doing on a Wednesday, she would do art classes with some people from her friends, some students, and they would often have wine there, and it just, the vibe in the studio becomes such a friendly open space for people to just express their creativity and talk about things. And I really like that spirit that she kind of created in that space, and I wanted to replicate it here as well. Because I feel like with my job, and most people I think feel like that with their jobs, is you don't often get a chance to be a child or to play or draw like a child.
That's true.
It's so important to just take even in one evening a month to allow yourself to do that, you know?
Yeah, be creative.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Be creative, take some time for yourself. And we had a workshop not too long ago about self-love, and sometimes about like forcing yourself to take that time and not feel guilty about it. I haven't done it in a while, I should probably do it.
And so that's the Why Not and the Future Female. It's super exciting.
I think I'm kind of like you in that I like to do a lot of different things to keep myself busy, and I've always kind of done that. I know that you also, you work on a million things.
I don't do it on purpose.
It's because everything is just so exciting.
That's true.
There's, I guess there's good and bad to that as well. To be overwhelmed with things, like I've stopped doing the Why Not now, but the Future Females is something I've been doing, or that I first got interested in 2016 when they first launched in Cape Town.
Right.
And I met the founder there. Her name is Lauren. She's this amazing businesswoman and female founder. And she's kind of now grown this network across the world. I think they're in 22 different countries at the moment. And last year I launched Future Females in Berlin. And it was an amazing event. I think we had over 100 people come through and we presented and we spoke about a lot of things and we just really got an open conversation going about the challenges that female founders face or female entrepreneurs face. And the main aim of the community or the collective is to really empower one another and support one another and create this network of support and and resources and being able to, what we have is like this give first mentality as well. And that, I feel like I have that mentality a lot in my life as well, so that's maybe why it resonated with me so well, is that put out into the universe and it will come back to you, maybe not in the ways that you expect, but I've been doing that since I first started working, since first running my company, and it's always come back in a positive light. And
like what?
Even if it's, I guess even if it's things that my co-founder very often doesn't understand why I'm doing, or why I let... I've often run events for free, or why I let people use my space for free, or why I would do something for free. A lot of the time, the people that I give to is like, it'll come back and they'll think of me for another project, or they'll recommend me to someone else and that'll get me another project. Or, and it also just creates this name for yourself, as it's not all about the money all the time, because building up the community, without your community in your company or in your lifestyle or whatever you're doing, you don't have much going for you. So it's, for me, it's one of the strongest pillars of what we built our company on. It's
Give first.
Exactly. We used to run free workshops and trainings as well. We've done a couple of trainings for underprivileged kids in South Africa, where we taught them blockchain training and coding, which helped them level up their skills independently after that as well, and got them into the industry and allowed them to get international jobs as well. So, I mean, that's the kind of stuff that's really cool, because then those students, sometimes a lot of them will upskill the hell out of themselves, and they're so hungry to learn. That they learn much faster than some of the people that we've actually trained in corporate for. And they'll often either come and apply for jobs or internships with us, or go and work at another company and create good partnerships for us moving forward.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I really like it. I mean, it takes a long time, I think, to build that up, and to build that level of trust as well. But I love it. I love it so much.
And I mean, you never had bad experiences, right, doing this?
I mean, every now and then, like, you'll get people trying to take advantage of the system, but ultimately, the industry that I work in, the blockchain industry, it's a very tight-knit community of people that are actually trying to do good shit. Like, they want to see a positive change in the world, and they're working on it because they believe they're able to make that change. And I think that's what drew me to the industry, is because, like, all of these crazy idealists and nerds and designers and thinkers and doers, and they all just really determined at making a positive impact on the world.
That's awesome.
And they believe that they can. And I think that's what's really amazing about the space. So,
cool.
Yeah.
So Future Female.
Future Females kind of ties into that. So we started doing, like I mentioned, I did the Berlin chapter. Sorry, I got completely off topic there.
No.
Went down some rabbit hole.
It was beautiful. I didn't know that. So, and I mean, I see it that you offer those events for free, and even the space. Like, we are doing a couple things at your current location in Basel, and it's, for us, it's amazing. You know, the place is beautiful, and we're super grateful.
And sometimes it's just that as well, though. It's not about like expecting anything. I think that's the main thing as well. It's like giving without the expectation of return.
Yeah.
Because the moment you expect a return or something, then it loses the reason that you started it in the first place. So, I mean, like, sometimes for me as well, it's something that I do to give back for myself, because it makes me feel good to empower other people. So it's a way for me as well to, like, self-love and to still be able to feel good about the work that I do. So.
Thanks for sharing that. I also don't know where to go from here.
from Berlin, then I opened the Basel one, because Berlin was so amazing. There was such an electric energy in the room. I'm like, no, more people need to know about this. So bringing it to Basel as well. Basel is a very different chapter as well. So we call them chapters across the different cities that they're in. And Basel is very different because it's a much smaller community. So on average, we'll have like 10 to 15 people come through to an event, as opposed to like 100, 150, 200 in other countries. But the community that we built here is a lot more... I feel like they're a lot more together. I don't even know how to quite explain it, but we have a WhatsApp group and they're supporting one another in unusual ways that I didn't quite see coming up. And I think that's as well, like going with the dynamic that the community grows itself in, as long as it's still supportive, as long as it's still kind, as long as it's still a healthy environment, like I think we should be very dynamic in how we do build these communities. And and the Future Females in Basel one, I mean, I don't know how you feel if you've got value out of it, but...
I think I'm... What I like the most about these kind of events is meeting with people, you know, and being inspired and have a good time, you know?
Yeah,
of course, the talk was valuable too, but my favorite, and because of course I did the podcast and my thing is to talk, you know, and, or listen, depends. And so it's to meet the people after, you know, and be like, oh, what do you do? Oh, wow, that's awesome. Do you want to do something together? Maybe, if it resonates or whatever. Yeah. Well, for example, the first one where Bianca came and her friend Ali, the photographer from Zurich, came. I was following her on Instagram, but then she came to the event, and then I did a photo shoot with her, for example.
That's amazing. We call that cross-pollination.
Okay.
So it's when you both have different skills, or you can both work together and collaborate on a future project, or you find synergies between different people, and so what you do could maybe, like, I mean, I found you through this, and now I'm doing this podcast, and I think it's awesome, and I listen to your podcast, and I think it's so great. And Bianca as well, being like this mindful social media coach.
Awesome.
There's such a strong need for that. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people as well that come through to these events find inspiration, like you said, through other women. And that's really what it's about. It's about helping one another up and building those connections and the cross-pollination between different different workflows.
And promoting one another, you know.
Yeah.
And that's, I guess, that's what Future Female is about, to support one another.
Mm-hmm.
And a friend of mine, we were talking about this on Tuesday. She said, usually... And she's not for it, but she said, I think usually women are more likely to destroy one another or compete with one another. I don't want to do that, you know. I want to really... I'm happy for someone if they do what they love, and if they add value to anybody's life.
I think I understand where she's coming from, because having done this now for 2-3 years, you kind of notice the difference. And for me, mostly what I see is either an industry divide or a generational divide. So, for example, women in high positions of power in big corporates that are maybe 30 plus or 35 plus, or the women that have really, really had to work to get to where they were due to the inequalities of the past, they're going to be a lot more fierce and maybe a lot more protective of their position, and not as willing to maybe help other women up to their level, because they had to really fight for it. So there is this almost a small resentment sitting on their chest that you can definitely feel in a lot of people. And we actually, when we launched the Lucerne chapter recently, there was a lady there who just had to work really hard to get to where she was. So she was still a bit skeptical of, like, the woman supporting women kind of thing. But
was she a little bit older then?
She was a little bit older, but she, I think, I'm not even sure she'll come through to another event. But she did. I'm glad I got to talk to her at least, because it's good to get a different perspective as well.
I mean, for me it's so obvious. But, you know, but also I have I consider myself to be nowhere, you know, but how can I say this in a positive way?
Say it how it is.
It's not, I don't feel like I have, like, someone can take something away from me, you know? In any way, what I do is me, you know? It's really, nobody else can do it, because it's not them. So, like this podcast, you know?
Yeah, it's yours.
If you want to start going to a coffee shop and do a podcast, like, you can, but... do you love it as much as I do? I'm not sure. No, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know, you. It's this authentic business thing that Bianca does and all my friends do. And So for me, it's super normal, but I get... No, I don't get it, actually, but...
I think it's... we don't have to fully understand it or get it or feel the same way. We just have to have a tolerance for that it's there. Mm. It's the way that they view it, and they're fully entitled to feel that way.
I see it a lot in companies, you know? Mm. Like, in the company I work in now. Is that... Don't you think
corporate,
it's different?
Right? Yeah. It is different. I don't know, one of our mutual friends has recently resigned, for example, from a corporate position, and the moment she's resigned, they treat her differently. And she's really struggling with that, because it's the superficial relationship, I guess, with your colleagues, instead of one that's actually beneficial to your growth, or one that'll help you either achieve your personal or career goals, I guess. Yeah. And I've worked in corporate as well. I worked for a bank for a year in South Africa.
Yeah.
That's kind of when I realized that I don't want to work in a corporate ever again.
The atmosphere, right?
It is.
It kills you.
Working
slowly.
In a cubicle, being told to fetch coffee for people. I don't know. I much prefer being able to, like... When I
be the title in your
managing director. So when I started my company, there's like, because I'd gone through corporate and because I'd worked remotely for a while, I knew exactly how I didn't want to run my company, and we started building like a different way of running it, and it works very well for us. So we work remotely, we work flexible hours. We've only recently gotten an office. We have an office in Cape Town and an office in Basel, so this is the first time we've had offices where people can come into. And I'm still not even sure if they're a good idea, because most of the time the team prefers to work from coffee shops or from home. But having that flexibility, it increases happiness so much, and it creates the supportive environment with one another as well, and being there for one another. And we do have a very open culture as well. Like, often my team, if they can't come in because of a personal reason, they'll tell me everything, kind of a thing. So I'm glad that we have that honest and transparent culture.
There's trust.
Yes, there is trust. And
sides.
I guess we have to if we work remotely as well.
And that's what I noticed, because I did both. I'm still doing both, like work remotely for an organization and work in corporate there. And I see the difference. You just met my boss just before, and she totally trusts. I trust her, because I write my hours and at the other company too. But anyway, I see a lot of fear and a lot of unreliability. Can you say that? Is that a word?
That's the right word. I get what you mean, though.
They're
not reliable.
People are sick a lot, like for starters, and then I think that they don't really, they're always like scared for their position, first of all. If someone else is gonna come in, they're like a little scared to get fired or something like that. They're scared that, or they think that the other person is not working enough. Or, you know, they compare themselves a lot.
So it's quite like an unhealthy almost environment.
Yeah, very unhealthy. That's why people are sick all the time, you know? And then, home office, it's called. It's not really a thing unless you're sick. Then you can work from home. Pretty crazy. Because they're not sure if the people are going to work or not. And... it's a very different mindset than from entrepreneurship and corporate like this. And I know in some companies they do it easily.
I think some companies are moving a little bit more towards flexible hours and towards like even 3 days remote work every now and then. So I mean, the change is coming, and I think that corporates are starting to realize that it makes a difference. But like you mentioned, there was a lot of issues to unpack in that sentence of how the company works there as well. But the trust issue as well. I mean, like our team is small. We're only about, I think, 12 people at the moment now. But it's very familiar. It's very tight. We're all friends. We trust one another. Mm-hmm. We're friends. Yeah. We've spent a long time curating our company culture to be what we want our company to be representative of. So we will not hire somebody who doesn't believe in our values or in our ethics or in the way that we want to interact with the world or the world to see us. Everyone on our team is awesome, I'm not gonna lie. We have a team of badasses. And they're entrepreneurial, and they're driven, and they're go-getters, and they're super hard workers. And they're really kind and ethical and moral people as well. So, I mean, there's all of these elements to it. And I don't think we have a toxic culture in terms of people worrying about their jobs, or we try and keep, like, it's still business. So, like, there's still rules, there's still ways that we do things. We still have some sort of a routine. It's just a lot more flexible than, I guess, a corporate culture.
And you wrote an article that I read.
Yes.
About, what was it? Output, they getting paid?
Output-based. Oh, wait, was it the output-based one? It was remote work. Oh, wait, it was presence-based versus output-based.
Yeah.
So at the moment, what you're talking about, the corporate companies, it's a present-based, presence-based. So, like, you have to be in the office, you have to be working, but sometimes you'll be, like, I don't know if it was true for you, but when I was working at the bank, for example, I would sometimes finish my work by 3 p.m., and then still have to just, like, sit in my chair and stare at the clock for another two hours. And I just don't see that as a use of, like, a good use of time. Like, flexible working, I say this quite often, it's not about working less hours or more hours, it's about working smarter hours. Mm-hmm. As long as your work gets done and it meets its deadline, like, I don't really care when you work, as long as you make it to your meetings, you have your work in, like, it really should be up to you when you work. Because I have some days as well when I wake up and I just feel like crap, and I'm not going to get anything done for the first 3 hours, but then maybe I'll have, like, hit hyper productivity from about 9 p.m. onwards, and I work for 1 hour and I get everything done in that 1 hour. So, I mean,
but it's a mindset, don't you think? Because that's what I noticed at the company, that people are used to receive, then, like, served on a platter, you know, those are the tasks you're gonna have to do, and then they know they have this much time to be there, and then sometimes they talk and they do a ton of things. Like, I saw it today, like, with my colleague, and she's not gonna listen to that, so it's fine. But I saw, like, we shared our work, and my goal, but because I'm paid per hour, is to get out of there as soon as I can, you know, because I'm fine with the minimum salary, kind of, you know, so I can work on my projects on the side. So I'm, like, really, like, hurrying to get things done so I can get out. And they have the whole day, so they're like, let me do this and this, and it's just another mindset.
I get it. That must be frustrating to work with that dynamic.
So I think this needs to change too, you know, that it might take a while to...
I think so. It has to... I mean, not everyone can work remotely as well. That's one of the things with our company culture as well. When we hire someone, we have a three-month probation period. And if we realize after 3 months that you cannot work remotely, that we cannot trust you if you're not showing up to meetings or handing in work, then we can't work with you, basically. I mean, some people just really need the routine that an office brings. Mm-hmm. Like, you arrive at work at 9, you leave at 5. Like, some people need that, and that's fine. It's just not what we need.
Let's see what happens in the world.
I'm excited. I really would like to see if I can help more companies go remote, so hit me up.
Like, give talks in companies or give them, like, consulting?
I guess I could consult people on how to do it, because it's not really, like, a night and day thing. And for a lot of employees, it's scary, I think, for employers to now trust your employees. But there's also that sad thing saying, like, if you're worried that your employees won't work if you go remote, then you have a lot more problems than you think. Like, you should be able to trust your employees.
But I think
the team that you have,
most of the people, they don't want to work there. Maybe half, let's say half. It's like,
well, I guess that's another thing.
And so, of course, when they don't have to, they won't do it, you know?
I think we're really fortunate that everyone on our team wants to work in our team, I hope.
Yeah, that's great. So, what would you be calling this consulting position?
I don't know. What shall we call it? The made-up title.
Devon Consulting.
Yes. Maybe I'll just build it onto Lenham. Lenham Lance can take on remote counselling. We also, we counsel on a lot of things. We do not counselling, we do consulting.
Oh, yeah.
We do blockchain consulting as well for our corporate clients. So with blockchain training, software development, consulting. We run hackathons, which is really nerdy and really fun. We get 200 coders together and we hack on solutions to build things with blockchain.
I have no idea what she's talking about, but
it's amazing. A room full of people coding stuff with a goal. So they have to, they basically try and solve problems or build things that'll fix a problem or.
Where is that?
We've run two before in the past. Both of them we've run in Cape Town. The last big one that we ran was East Cape Town. In East Cape Town, we had 200 hackers come through. 67% of them were South African, actually, so it's quite nice to have the local community very involved. Mm-hmm. And we did basically a day of training and getting everyone amped about the technology. And then we had, I think it was something 3 days of just coding. So people stay up all night coding problems and wow. Working in teams, and then they present at the end, and there's big prizes. You can win 100,000 rand. It's not that much, $10,000 ish.
Wow.
So, they code for a reason, and then companies will sponsor. And
mm-hmm. Is Cape Town big in startups?
Cape Town has a really thriving startup economy. Oh, yeah. It's really fun, actually. That city is it's a vibe. You can feel it when you get there. But it's also a lifestyle city, which is what I also really miss about Cape Town, because there's 800 wine farms around Cape Town.
Talk about wine.
What's wrong with wine? I feel like South Africans drink a lot more. Yeah, so it's a lifestyle city. People wake up and get to work only about 9.
I thought you were going to say, people get up, have some wine.
Go to yoga.
Oh my God.
Drunken yoga. Okay, that's it. That's my next meetup idea.
Okay.
I see the coaches.
Yeah, sure. You said that last time.
Yeah.
That they're more chilled.
They are more chilled. I mean, if there's... On Fridays, at least, I know a lot of people leave work at 3 p.m. even to go and watch the sunset, have a surf, go and there's a lot of outdoor life. I mean, where I used to live in Cape Town, it was a 5-minute drive to the ocean or a 5-minute drive to the mountains. So
there's the Rhine.
I do like the Rhine. The floating down the Rhine thing in summer is so much fun.
But I get it. So I want to touch upon something.
Sure.
So you said, coders, they work hard and they worked all night, for example, at this event.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do you balance this? I don't want to use the word work-life balance, but self-care, self-love, with working so much. What do you do to wind down?
I think, to be honest, that's probably one of my problems at the moment. And I do feel like this year I've experienced burnout for the first time ever.
Oh wow.
And I didn't really know what people were talking about when they talked about burnout and how bad it could get. I was like, oh, come on, guys, get your shit together. anyway, I have
That's
a whole
great,
new realm of sympathy and empathy, I guess, for burnout now. Because working remotely, I guess, there is no off button. As opposed to the end of the day at work, when you leave at 5 p.m., shut your laptop, you're done. When I work remotely, sometimes if I start late as well, then I feel like I need to compensate and work until super late.
Midnight?
We've worked really, really late until 4 in the morning sometimes on proposals.
Really
we push really hard. I mean, especially when we have big projects, we can easily work 10, 11 hours a day without even thinking about it. And then because I work on my laptop and I always have my laptop with me, except now for some reason.
Great.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm always online, I'm always connected. And my work emails and my WeHo's Discord to chat to the team, I have that on my phone as well. So I'm always online and there's no break. I tried more actively lately on the weekends to keep my phone and my laptop off.
Mm-hmm.
And I do these events. So, I mean, Future Females for me was not a work event. It was that fills up my energy bar again. And I take my cat for walks.
Yeah. On a leash.
On a leash.
In the forest.
Yeah, exactly. But I do need a better, I think, work-life balance. And that's something I'm definitely going to work towards next year. So this... tomorrow actually I'm taking my first 3 weeks of leave this year.
Wow. So first holiday?
First holiday in a year. Because I don't know, I got to this point where every morning I just woke up feeling deflated and broken, and I hated my job. I love my job. I know that I love my job, and I'm good at my job. And I love my industry, and I love blockchain. But it got to this point where I was so sick of seeing the word blockchain, I didn't even want to open my laptop in the morning. Yeah. Everything felt like a chore. I was procrastinating. I was taking too long to do things that I know that I could do like super quickly, and it's just got into this really bad environment.
When was that?
This was like not even that long ago. This was like last month when it started to like culminate to this point. And it just started affecting all of my relationships, and I started cancelling all my plans with my friends, and it was really a bad space, I think, that I was in. And I think one of the guys on my team, he's super, super nice and supportive. He was like, no, this is burnout, you gotta take leave now. So that's actually, the thought of going on leave now tomorrow has given me the energy, I think, to push through the last month as well, and I cannot wait to disconnect.
So you didn't go to the doctor or anything?
Okay. I do see a psychologist once a week.
Okay.
So I think it's super important as well for anyone working in a high stress environment to have a psychologist, even if like just someone to check in on. And I check in with her every week, and she tells me if I'm being crazy or not. So I think it's a good sounding board. But she also kind of noticed, and she was like, okay, no, you do need a break. So.
And does she give you medicine?
She doesn't give me medicine. I try and not take anything. I can actually maybe one day in a future podcast dive a little bit more into I was diagnosed with bipolar when I was 13, bipolar disorder, and I spent my entire teenagerdom trying to balance that. It's super weird because I've always been super high achieving, like straight A student on every single sports team, but then I was just like a complete nightmare on the side.
But you would have like ups and downs.
Yes,
no?
I think it's type 1 where I have severe highs and severe lows. Mm-hmm. And then when I got to university, they put me on lithium and lamotrigine. So I was on the drugs for about 2 years, and it made me like a zombie. I was not myself at all. I was still performing like grade wise, but I couldn't be myself, and I kind of weaned myself off of them for a while. I actually started smoking weed to bring myself down a little bit more, and like that weed helped for a while. Then I would smoke it when I needed to, but then I started smoking it every single day, like twice a day, and then I worked at the bank while I was smoking weed, and it was just like this awful monotonous circle of I don't know, it was just like I got into this repetition type routine where my life was just this, either I'm at work in a corporate job or I'm high. So then I stopped smoking weed, and I think I stopped for a few weeks, and then I was like, holy shit, my brain can work faster. So I stopped, I haven't touched it again since then. So but then like kind of the bipolar comes back, and it affects my work sometimes as well, because I'll go through periods of hyper productivity and then I'll go through periods where I work super slowly and I cannot. But it's I don't think actually anyone on my team knows I'm bipolar. Maybe they do because I'm a little bit crazy. No, they'll know. Hey guys.
So you take drugs for that or not?
Not anymore. So it's actually a while back. Not a while back, maybe a year and a half ago, I started reading a lot of studies on ketamine and ketamine treatments for bipolar disorder. And I did a lot of research. I reached out to a couple of medical doctors. I reached out to some of the treatment centers. I had meetings with them. I had calls with them. And I started experimenting with ketamine to treat my bipolar disorder. And I would check in with my psychologist and with my psychiatrist. And like it was a very monitored thing. So ketamine is also a party drug that you can get in Berlin. It's kind of like a horse tranquilizer. But I know, so it's quite a hectic thing to do. But I was kind of at this point as well where I needed to be able to function.
And in the lows.
I needed to not have those lows because it's not who I am as a person. And it was very difficult to distinguish what reaction I was having because it was a appropriate reaction, what reaction I was having because it was maybe triggered by bipolar, for example. So then the ketamine I started taking, I took like a small amount once a week for the first 4 weeks, and then once a month, and then once every 3 months, and now I haven't taken it again in maybe 6 months. And I could feel the effects of it from day one. And I have not since that first day had a low like I've had in the past. And I have not had a high as detrimental to my health as I had in the past either.
So why is it detrimental?
So it's actually, there's a lot of studies that have come out on it now, and ketamine has actually just been approved by the FDA in the States for the treatment of bipolar disorder and major depressive disorder. So it's called esketamine, so it's a derivative of ketamine, and they're actually doing it, administering it now in clinics and trials. So I mean, it can help a lot of people, and I think this is a story that I've always kind of wanted to share with people, because I needed the help so bad, and I didn't know that this existed, and now it exists. And I just like from other bipolar people, or people working with major depressive disorder, like there is help, and it might not work for everyone, but it's got a 70% success rate, as opposed to a drug like lithium, which hasn't seen innovation since the 60s and only has a 30% success rate, and it deteriorates your brain. So I mean, like, and ketamine doesn't have any negative side effects that they've been able to see so far. It is quite addictive, but I'm fortunate enough to not be an addictive person. So I mean, I was able to look after myself. But yeah, so that's kind of what happened with the bipolar stuff. I think I'm definitely still a bipolar, but it's so much more manageable now. Like, it doesn't feel like it rules my life anymore, and I'm able to much more comfortably look after my company. Yeah.
What was the question? Yeah, so self-care.
Self-care. So, looking after my mental health has been like a big, big, big part of it.
Therapist once a week,
and I mean, the ketamine was part of it, but now I don't need it anymore.
Can you do anything else? Do you do anything else for your mental health?
For my mental health, I exercise. I mean, I've recently in Basel started CrossFit and spinning. There's a really great spinning class in Basel.
Yes.
Called Cyclo Studio.
And they have a great website now.
I built the website. Yeah, so that was actually quite a cool one, because I gave first, I guess, into that one. I was kind of like, that was more of a barter, actually. I was kind of like, if I'll build your website if I can come to lessons. Yeah. And that worked out quite nicely.
That's great. Yeah. And then CrossFit, too.
And then CrossFit. I do CrossFit once a week. They kick my ass every week. I went yesterday, and they made us go running in the rain. yeah. But it's nice as well to have that community aspect to exercising.
And anything to chill?
To chill, I can binge Netflix for like 10 hours at a time. I really like going to the movies, but I can never get myself to go to the movies. Yeah, Netflix is a good one I chill out with.
Nature.
Oh, being around nature is so important. I think friends for me is a big one as well, because I mean, like,
you can talk and share and
I think I've missed that for a long time, or at least running a company, I always feel like there's pieces of myself that I'm allowed to share and pieces that I'm not allowed to share. Like, for example, I thought for the longest time, like, the bipolar was something that I wasn't allowed to share, because I don't want people to think I'm crazy, or I don't want my team to think that I'm not capable of doing my job. But I think that's also about beating the stigma around it.
Totally.
Yeah.
Like, we need to talk about it. Also burnout, you know? Like,
burnout, yeah, exactly.
Because it happens to so many people.
Yeah, and I guess people don't even realize it when it comes around. Yeah. And there's this such clear signs of it. And people just ignore them. I ignored them. I ignored them to the point of where I was barely able to get out of bed. There's so many Christmas carols playing.
Yeah, sorry for the Christmas song.
It's okay, it's festive.
It's so loud. Yeah. Cool. So, self-care,
looking after yourself, taking the not feeling guilty, I guess. Feeling guilty, I think, is a big one. I think I feel, feel guilty taking leave, because I'm like, shit, I need to go after the company, I need to do.
I feel the same, actually.
Yeah. It's like,
because I could, I usually work every day, you know. If I'm not with my partner on the weekend, I will find a way to work on something,
yeah,
or visit a venue like I was telling you before, or whatever.
Do you read? Do you like reading? No.
Now that Audible came out, like, maybe less, but yeah, before I go to bed, I read.
Yeah, I used to really like reading, and I haven't found time to do that, so that's like another big one, I think.
So you think when you go back to that, then you find a
book? I think it'll be nice. Yeah. There's one of my friends, actually, she was saying how much easier it is when you're a child to be completely absorbed and consumed in a book.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I don't know if you like read like a really good story and you just like, it becomes this all-consuming, amazing world.
Yeah.
It's so much harder to reach that level of immersion in a book once you're an adult, because you can maybe read before bed, or you read on the weekends when you have time, but like that full immersion is so difficult now.
And nothing to do with technology, just being an adult.
Yeah, maybe it does have something to do with technology as well, because we're always like, I mean, you're reading and then ping, phone goes.
Yeah. And my attention span is not that long anymore.
Yeah.
It's sad. But yeah, I think we're the last generation who can still... Because when I see my sisters, it's a bit worse, you know? They are 10 years younger.
Oh, wow.
So than me, so that's like 20. And I think that generation is... They grew up with technology. Or did you grow up with Facebook?
Yeah, oh my gosh, I have my most embarrassing 13-year-old pictures on Facebook from when it first came out.
Right.
I think it was in about grade 8 when it came out, so then we didn't know what you should and should not post on Facebook, so it's just like...
Drunk pictures?
Oh no, dude, I was 13. And you, did you grow up with Facebook?
No, I got it when I was 20. So,
oh, wow.
Or 18 maybe.
Hmm.
So no,
much
no
better.
Social media. Yeah.
Much better.
So that's critical for you, actually.
Damn.
No, I think it's much harder to get rid of your phone. Or,
yeah.
I mean, for me too. But.
I actually keep thinking next time I go and travel or I take time off, I'm going to leave my smartphone at home, my iPhone, and I'm going to get like
tomorrow?
A flippy phone and a camera.
Tomorrow?
Maybe. No, I need it.
Exactly.
You're right.
Maybe between Christmas and New Year.
Maybe I'll just uninstall the work apps from my phone over Christmas.
Mm. Because you know, between Christmas and New Year, like, nobody's working, really.
No.
I guess. I hope.
Yeah. Our team is taking mandatory leave for Christmas and New Year as well.
So, great.
Yeah. It's good.
All right. What could we talk about? Christmas shopping? No, I'm kidding. Christmas songs are in.
It's funny, actually, in South Africa we don't celebrate. Oh, my family doesn't celebrate Christmas. Not because of any religious reasons or anything. We used to celebrate Christmas up until we were about like 10, 11 years old, and then it just stopped being a thing, really. Like,
yeah.
So my mom is in South Africa, it's very commercialized, so it's not like in Europe where it's traditional and like you have all of the traditions. It's like it's a commercial thing.
It's just the gifts.
Gifts and presents and Santa and everything, but it's like, I know that part of it is very tradition-based, but Southern, we don't really have that tradition, and it just came about, and now it's this huge thing, and my mom started, it's not about the presents kind of a thing, so we'll still get together as a family and maybe make a big dinner, or in South Africa it's hot during Christmas, so we'll go swim and braai.
Yeah,
we call it a braai, it's like a barbecue for you heathens that call it a barbecue.
How do you call it?
Braai, B-R-A-A-I, braai.
yeah, it's different. Yeah, I did Christmas in Australia. It's also like barbecue,
surfing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's different.
It's very different, and it doesn't have the same vibe actually. Mm. You know, here it's cold.
It's
maybe
cozy.
It's snowing.
Grandparents have made 50 million meals for you.
Yes.
Yeah,
totally. In France, it's like that. And here, not so much, but in south of France, it's like, oh my god, 10 dishes, and you're at the table the whole afternoon, actually.
Well,
and then in the evening, you eat again.
Do you also do your Christmas caroling? I was from my German, my German grandparents.
The German.
Yes, they like scheduled in half an hour of carol singing before presents.
That's what my partner does and his family, I hate it because I'm not used to it, you know.
My and they print out all the lyrics, and I was like, oh, what do you actually want us to sing?
But they do. My whole family does, and I was like in German, you know, and I'm like. But yeah, so this Christmas I'm not spending Christmas Eve with them.
What are you doing for Christmas this year?
No, I'm just seeing my mom. I'm like, you guys sing, I'll come tomorrow.
Yeah. Balance.
Yeah. I'll come for the food, it's okay. Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing. Do you have any other topics you'd like to share? I think it's been
nice.
About an hour.
Look at you. I'm so sorry for talking at you for a whole hour. No, it's been interesting, I think, talking out with you. Feel free to edit out anything. Do you have any last questions or any closing thoughts?
What is the impact you want to have on the world? Sometimes I ask that.
The impact that I want to have on the world. I would like to... Well, at the moment, I mean, I'm very geared towards helping other female entrepreneurs get started. I would really love to be able to positively impact female entrepreneurs and grow their companies, because it's hard. It is really, really hard.
To be a woman...
I think to be an entrepreneur is hard in general, and being a female entrepreneur, there are a lot of hurdles. There's a lot of challenges.
Do you want to talk about the challenges? Because that's one of my questions, but I forgot.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I mean, I think I told the story in the first Future Females as well. It's like when I first started in the blockchain industry, I was at a conference in Paris, and out of maybe 600 people, there was maybe 13 women. And I'd come straight out of corporate as well, so I was still wearing my pencil skirt and my high heels and my lipstick, and nobody would talk to me because I wasn't looking. I didn't look
startup
enough. I didn't look like everyone else at the conference. And we actually organized a dinner then with those 16 women. They were all facing the same problems. None of the men would talk to them, take them seriously. They'd be interrupted. They would not be taken as seriously. Be like, oh, can I talk to your co-founder or whatever?
When was that?
That was, when was that? 2017 maybe. But it's changed a lot since then.
Okay.
Since then, and it's what I realized was not that the industry doesn't want women, and they really do. They just don't know how to encourage more women into the conversation, I guess. Even at an event that I went to on Tuesday night, it was a meetup about DAOs, which is decentralized autonomous organizations. It's a blockchain thing. There was 20 people and not a single woman. So it's something that I'm trying to figure out, I guess, still. And I mean, I guess sexism in the industry is still a thing. In corporate, I noticed a lot more people calling me sweetie or honey, and I was like, no. That being called girl as well. It's like, it's fun when it's an empowering way, like, hey girl. But no, when it's like, they're talking to you like you're a child. So I think a lot of the way that I've had to change my interactions, either online or in person, I've had to learn. And it's changing small things like never apologizing in an email or using words like just or like, can I just ask you XYZ?
Can I ask you then?
Yes. So there's small differences in the way that I would communicate. And also my name is Devon. So I mean that. On email, a lot of people think I'm a man at first anyway. And I've had the most fun with that, actually, like organizing a meeting with somebody who's talked to me on email, and then they don't recognize me at all in person because they thought it was a man coming to meet them. But
so you just have to own it.
Yeah, and I mean, like, entrepreneurship, as I said, it's a fucking hard thing to do, and a lot of people will think you're crazy for wanting to do it, and I want to be able to be there for the people that need me to. Like, I want to be that supportive person. I want to be someone that people can turn to and ask questions and ask for help, and I want to be able to help them in any way that I can, really. I mentor at the Startup Academy in Basel as well. And the two girls that I mentor, they come from a community where nobody's an entrepreneur, and what they're doing is absolutely crazy to their parents and to their friends and to their family. And I'm just like, no, this is an amazing idea, you know. But pushing for it and finding the strength to say yes when everyone's telling you not to do it is really difficult. And I'm really proud of them as well. And they're going to be proud of themselves as well.
I'm that kind of person that has 10,000 ideas.
Yes.
You are like that too?
Yeah.
So how do you know you have to follow that one idea, a specific idea? Because you cannot do everything at the same time. Maybe in the long term you can do them all, but not right now. So how do you choose?
Yeah, oh my gosh, that's a great question, because I mean, I always talk about my company that I'm running now, Linum Labs, because it was my first successful startup. I don't talk about the five that failed before that, right? And I think that's another thing, like, failure is normal. Mm-hmm. And I've learned a million ways not to run my company, because I've made a lot of mistakes as well running it. But the millions of ideas that I've had before, I mean, I started with a company called Charity Chain, which was a blockchain, like, charitable organization type thing where you could track donations on the blockchain. That failed before it even hit off the ground. I didn't know enough about blockchain then to get it started. There was a company that we wanted to look at for matching domestic workers with houses. It was around the same time that Domestic and Sweet South started up in South Africa.
Okay.
It's like a Quine Good Cleaners it's a German one now as well. So that was an idea, and we won a startup competition for that. It was actually Paul and I as well. Oh. We've been good business partners moving forward with a lot of our ideas. So we got quite far with that, and we were at the point, we had like a business plan together, we were at the point where we were about to get funding, and then both of us sat down and like, is this really something that we were passionate about, that we would spend the next 5 years of our life building out?
Yeah.
And the answer was no. So we decided not to go ahead with it.
Sometimes there are external circumstances.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, for us, this was more of an internal circumstance. Yeah. So like, we could have got funding, we could have pushed it forward, but we just weren't passionate enough about it. And I think that that's maybe an important thing for female entrepreneurs and training entrepreneurs as well. It's like, if you have a really amazing idea and you want it to work, try it out. See how far you can get. See if other people validate it as a good idea. See if somebody will give you funding for it. If no, then answer's probably there for you already. I don't know. A lot of it is trial and error. I mean, is that saying as well as that you only ever feel two emotions, euphoria and terror? Running a startup, so you're euphoria and terror. So you're either super ecstatic and happy, or you're fearing for your company's life. Like, there is no in between in a
normal
startup. Yeah, it's completely normal. There is no in between.
That's how I feel every day.
Right? And it's terrifying, and it's so exciting.
It's like, it's the best idea ever. Oh, I'm so dumb.
Exactly. And you're going to feel alone, and I think it's more having confidence in yourself and your own abilities than in your idea as well. So I can... If you have an amazing idea and you fully believe in your ability to bring it to life, that's more important.
And the chat, so any other kind of challenges? Well, I think those are pretty good ones, huh?
I mean, there's the normal ones as well, like the how-tos, or the, like, how to get started, how to put together a business plan, there's all of those stuff, but that... Future females can help you out with that.
Yeah, yeah.
Go get some consulting.
That you're gonna do. No, that's great.
Yeah, I
think you shared a lot about how you started and your struggles and.
I think still the most important thing is the community, and the community that you build up around it. I would not be where I am without the help and support of, first of all, some really amazing women in my life, but also just like some really amazing people. I've received a lot of help. I'm a mentee as well, so I have a mentor.
Business mentor.
I have a mentor that helps me like with different spheres as well. Public speaking, I have a mentor. I go to Toastmasters. It's just like continuously upskilling. I don't know, it's super important to keep growing as a person and realizing what aspects you want to grow into, and then finding people that can help you in the ways that you want to be. I often find people that I admire or want to be like, and chat with them or spend more time with them.
Yeah, it's important, I think, to surround yourself with people who are inspiring.
Yes, exactly, because there's that saying as well, it's like you're the average of the people that you spend time with.
Yeah, exactly. I think five.
Yes,
five
people. Yeah.
And that makes total sense for me. Because I've, and whatever I wanted to do, I realized that I super organically and genuinely met those people and wanted and became friends with them, yeah. You know? And then it was like that I'm doing that thing already, kind of. And then I would do it like the comedy thing, you know? I love Vanessa. Oh, and yeah, we so hang nice. Out when we can, and she gives me advices, and yeah, it was just super random and super organic, and I have yoga examples like that, and
oh, yeah,
it's yeah, it's important.
Future, gonna keep growing the company. Gonna keep. Pushing forward, yeah. Going on leave, take a nap.
Yeah. It's always a good idea.
Yeah.
Holidays and napping.
Yeah.
Great.
Thank you for chatting.
Yeah, thanks. See you a nice Christmas.
You too.
Thank you.